Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. I want to remind you all that you can weigh in and let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports or even email me at AlMartin@WKAR.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We want to hear what's on your mind. And, of course, you know you can give us a ring here right at the station by calling 517-355-9527. And how have you been enjoying the show so far? I encourage all of the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversations that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet, Facebook, call us, email. Please let us know what's on your noggin. All right, today is the day, folks. Current Sports TV launches, people. Yes, we will tape today at 6 p.m. and premiere that episode on September 12th. I will be joined by Spartan Hoop great, now Detroit Pistons TV analyst, Greg Special K. Kelser. That's right. And folks, yes, you can be a part of the show. It's not too late. It's a live audience that holds up to 80 people. It's free. All you have to do is sign up and show up. Go to WKAR.org and find out how. It only takes 2 minutes, folks. Really simple and easy. Again, that's today at 6 p.m. right here in the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on Michigan State's campus in Studio F. You don't want to miss it. I'm certainly excited. I can't believe the day is already here that we're about to tape this thing. Unbelievable. All right, well, let's dive into the radio show. Today's guest is a professor here at Michigan State University in the field of economics. And he also covers sports economics, which is a very interesting topic. Larry Martin, welcome to Current Sports.
Well, thanks, Al. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you, Larry. Now, Larry, for all those out there like me who didn't know much about this field until I started doing research on it, what is sports economics, Larry?
Well, you know, we economists think that we can explain everything. And so it's just the application of economic thinking to sports. As simple as that. So all the kinds of issues that are present in the real economy, like how much people make and what we pay for things and business strategy, well, sports strategy is that, and things like that, well, are all present in sports, so they're fun to study. Somebody said sports are the laboratory of economics, so I like that.
Gotta love it. Now, when did your interest in sports begin, Larry?
Well, sports, well, like everyone's when I was four, I suppose, or maybe three, you know, playing baseball with dad and going to Washington Senator games and things like that.
What made you want to explore a different area? When you talk about it, of course you cover economics.
Yeah.
But what made you want to go into and kind of explore the world of sports economics?
I think the idea was to develop an online course. So I've got it online, and about something students are interested in. So if they're really interested in the topic, then you can teach them a little economics on the sly when they're not noticing.
Very, very true. Now, we talked yesterday, Larry, about how your students have conducted a lot of research, very intriguing research, to say the least. Now, Larry, can you talk about some of those topics we talked about yesterday? Because they are very, very thought-provoking, to say the least.
Sure. So there is this online course, but then the best thing that happened is I got to teach this senior seminar where our students do research. And my idea was that they could do it on sports because there's lots of data available and the students are interested in it. And I'm really surprised at how I got lots of good papers over the last 2 years. You know, you give students something that they're interested in and they can do good work.
And for those out there who don't know, I actually had Larry's class when I was a sophomore at Michigan State University, Econ 202, right?
There you go.
I didn't do too well.
Well,
but that's another subject. But go ahead, Gary. So talk about some of those topics.
Academic privacy, you know, prevents me from
That's very true. Well, I'm being real with you.
Well, you know, they come up with their own ideas. So take one, attendance in Major League Baseball. Now, that sounds like kind of a mundane topic, and lots of people have studied it. You know, why do fans come to the game? But their idea was, well, maybe the shape of the ballpark affects how many fans come into the game. So, you know, Al, when I was your age in the 70s, the ballparks were all cylindrical, right? And the AstroTurf, and they were multi-use facilities, you know, with truck pulls and tractor pulls, and then baseball, you know.
Everything
was symmetric. And then with Camden Yards in Baltimore, the team started to build these asymmetric ballparks with short right fields or short left fields and walls and angles. So it seems that this is the way things have gone, and this is a really good thing. And the students asked, well, do the fans like that? So they just tried to compare attendance for Major League Baseball teams over about a 30-year period. And they control for, that means they're comparing teams of equivalent performance on the field and in equivalent cities, so they control for aspects of the city and aspects of the team. And they found a really interesting thing, which is that fans like short right fields and long left fields.
Really?
And so people really like this asymmetry. And it was, I think that demand was latent before they started to build these new parks, because some of the old parks were asymmetric, like Tiger Stadium. You remember it had the upper deck that leaned out over the
field.
And then very deep center and things like that. And so fans seemed to like that. And they did other things, like fans like walls, and the optimal size park is about 50,000 fans. So people, I had heard people say in the past that some of the old parks were too big, and because there were too many seats, the seats weren't scarce, and people wouldn't buy their tickets ahead of time. So they thought that they could actually get more attendance by making the park smaller, and that seems to be true. So
wow. So when you talk about researching a thing like this to see what kind of ballpark fans gravitate to,
yeah,
how do you start researching this? I mean, how do you, what's the steps you take to research something
like that? The steps you take are you open up a spreadsheet and you start putting numbers in there. So you look up, you know, on MLB.com what the annual attendance is for every team. And then you go get data on the distance to right and the distance to left and whether they have a wall or not and whether they have a dome. And then you get data on the cities, you know, like their average income in the cities and the population, whether they have another team. I think they had weather climate data too. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you do what's called a multiple regression. It's a simple little statistical technique which just involves pushing a button, and then out come the results. And
just like that. So it's a machine that does that once you put all the data in.
Oh, yeah.
That is pretty cool stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us, we are talking with MSU economy professor Larry Martin. Again, I had Larry as a professor. He's a great professor, ladies and gents. Now, in what way do sports economists aid sports teams and orgs with their research, Larry? Now, I know you talked about one of your students who's actually a consultant to the Braves, right?
Indians.
The actually. Indians, the Indians, excuse me.
So I think, you know, sports teams have some questions that are certainly economic, like how much should we charge and what should we be willing to pay for this player or that player. And you may have read the book or seen the movie Moneyball, where the stat guru analyzes the effectiveness of a player and, you know, finds one of the innovations was they found that on-base percentage was a very important statistic where the scouts had gone more for power and average. Mm-hmm. And so economists analyze statistics, and so they would analyze performance statistics and advise teams and the values of players they might be thinking of trading for or drafting. Those kinds of things. There are also strategy issues, like whether you should bunt or not, or whether you should walk.
What are the results on that? I'm curious.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about it, but I did have a student do one on intentional walks, and basically compared the outcome of an inning when they, in an intentional walk situation, when they decided to walk the batter intentionally. And he found, you do better if you walk better hitters. But an interesting thing was you have to pay attention to how good the next hitter is. You know, what's his name? Prince Fielder is making a career on knocking in Cabrera after he's intentionally walked. So
Right.
Then, So, you know, you can then look at any situation and say, okay, is my pitcher a strikeout pitcher or not? If you've got a strikeout pitcher, then it's safer to give an intentional walk. And, you know, how good is the next hitter? Those kinds of things can influence when it's a good time rather than just follow the old rule, you know, mm-hmm. that has come down. I think one of the things that this money ball phenomenon has told us is that it's worthwhile hiring a stats guy to
help
it
in
over.
That area.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to do exactly what he or she says either, but, you know, having this other view. Is, you know, one of the interesting things on that, if you don't mind, there's a famous paper by a guy named Paul Romer, and it's called It's Fourth and Two. And what he looks at is whether an NFL team should go for it on fourth down, and they rarely go for it. Mm-hmm. So he sets up this situation. He says, suppose you got the ball in the two and it's fourth down, so you're 2 yards away from scoring. So you can say, okay, if I go for it, I might score a touchdown. That's 7 points. If I kick a field goal, then that's 3 points. So the question would be, you know, on average, do I make it more than half the time that I should go for it? But he points out another thing, which is that if you go for it and fail, you leave the other team on the two or on the one, and that's not a good place to be.
That's true.
But if
right.
you kick a field goal, you get your 3 points, but then you kick off to them, they get the ball, and they run it back to about the 20 or something like that.
Yeah,
something like that. So what you need to know to make that decision is the relative value of the other team having the ball on the two versus having the ball on the 25 or something like that.
So what does he suggest to do? He says go for it.
You know, what he does is he computes the value of having the ball on every yard line. And then he, you know, did the arithmetic and found that teams ought to be going for it a whole lot more. So his paper was written up in the New York Times, and Bill Belichick, who is an economics major.
Really? Is he? I had no idea. Bill Belichick.
That's why he's so successful.
There you go. That's the reason why Bill Belichick has all those Super Bowl rings, people.
There you go.
He's economics.
So he called up Romer, and they discussed the paper, you know, and you may notice that Belichick is a little more aggressive at going for it on fourth down than your typical coach. So there are things you can learn in a strategy. In the strategy sphere, from actually sitting down and analyzing it, like sports economists would do.
That's really cool stuff, yeah. Larry. Now, so you do see more and more teams start to adopt that mindset and possibly hire someone in that area to kind of research little things like that to kind of get the leg up on the competition.
Oh yeah, I think that's sort of the Billy Bean bubble burst at Oakland, not because he was doing anything different, but that other people caught on to this.
Right, yeah. Right. Definitely. So. Now, I know we also talked yesterday, Larry, about how these type of, this type of research in the world of sports economy kind of translate to real world economy. Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. There are lots of things like you figure out how salaries are determined in baseball, and then you learn something about how salaries are determined in the economy. But I'll tell you about my best paper this year. It was really a brilliant idea. And the guy looked at hockey rule changes. So about 7 years ago, they changed the rules in hockey in a variety of ways. They changed the pad size, and they got rid of the two-line pass. Isn't that right?
I believe so.
I'm not certain about all of those. But the thing that he focused on was about refereeing. Mm-hmm. And the league wanted to reduce the clutching and grabbing. And so for, I think they call them interference penalties. Tripping, grabbing, those kinds of things. The referees were instructed to have zero tolerance, and they were given precise criteria about what is a tripping penalty, when to call it. Another one is slashing, you know. So those kinds
right.
of penalties. And then the student looked at data before and after the rule change and wanted to look at the effect. But he asked a particularly subtle question. So in all sports, there's something called the home ice bias or the home field bias. The refs are biased in favor of the home team. So there's been a lot of studies, and I know the refs would deny it. If you had somebody
he'd
say, I call it like I see them. But, when you look at the data, for example, in the NCAA, it amounts to about a foul and a half per game.
Right.
So if you look at the whole season, Michigan State's going to play at home. They're going to play on the road. Every team's going to play on the home and on the road. So all that's going to even out. And there are more fouls called on the visitors than on the home team. And, as that foul, the other thing is they try to even things up. So Michigan State has had four more fouls called on it than its opponent, then the next foul is significantly more likely to be called on the opponent. And if the refs were just calling it like they see it, then
they're just trying to compensate.
Trying to compensate. That's exactly right. So what this student did is he looked at the referee bias before and after the rule change for the home team. Now remember, the rule change told the refs to, under these exact circumstances, call this foul. Do not use your discretion. Do it then.
Call it like
zero tolerance, right? And then they checked up on the refs about this. So the question is, would this reduce the home ice bias? And he found that it did. In fact, it cut it in about half. But there was no change.
Cut it in half.
It cut the home ice bias in half. So, the other fouls, like icing and fighting and all the other things that were not covered by this rule change were unchanged.
Wow.
So you ask the question of what's the relevance for the real world? Well, referees are like police officers, aren't they? Or prosecutors. They're assigned to enforce the rules. And we ask them to use their discretion. Right? We ask them to say, okay, if somebody looks suspicious, maybe you want to stop that person and use your judgment. And so we ask them to do that, and then when we look at the data, we see that there's some bias. So, African-Americans are stopped more in traffic violations. There's research that shows that prosecutors bring more African-Americans to trial. They let others off. So this profiling issue is an important social issue.
Yeah.
So take the research that he did on bias. Now, that's not an important bias. That's home ice bias. That's not something we care as deeply about as we care about, bias for race or ethnicity. But this says that precise criteria, if the police are given precise criteria about when they can stop a car and told to follow that and data is kept and they are checked up, if prosecutors are given precise criteria about what cases to bring to trial and data is kept and they are checked up on, that, we can reduce this kind of bias. So that's kind of a window on the world that you get from looking at sports. And that's a very difficult subject to study when profiling by police officers. That's a very difficult thing to study because there's so many unobserved factors.
Right.
The beauty about sports is we got the data.
You got the data.
You know when the foul was called, at what time, what the score was, who the teams were, and it's
the exact situation and what's going on.
And so you can make statistical inferences that maybe you couldn't from a similar study in the real world. I think that's one of the beautiful things about sports economics.
When it comes to economics in the real world, there are economics who are just trained to look at and do research on the area as far as police go and looking at the discrimination of racial profiling when it comes to pulling someone over or a traffic stop or something like that.
Right.
Their economists are hired to do that kind of stuff when it comes to that, right?
Well, typically the economists that you're talking about are professors and there are enough of them that are interested in that
independent
topic.
Research.
That's what that is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Larry, before I let you go, I want to get your opinion on the field of sports economy. And do you see it growing in the next 5 to 10 years? Where do you see the status of this field in the future?
Well, yeah, it's growing. You can keep track of it by the number of papers published and the number of journals that are specializing on that.
Right.
But I think that economists and researchers of all fields have kind of glommed onto this idea that you can get a handle on difficult issues in the real world by looking at how they play out in sports, where you have, you know, what are sports? They're kind of like experimental, right? You have controlled conditions and you have a lot of measurement. You got a lot of data. And that's, of course, what makes fun is, as a sports fan, is we have the data and we can argue with each other, you know, about what ought to be done and back it up. But also it's something you can use to do research that is worthwhile in a lot of areas. So, yeah.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Larry Martin. He is a professor in the field of economics at Michigan State University. How can students get involved with your class at MSU, Larry?
So the online course anybody can take. I think the prerequisite is just the course that you took.
Yes.
Economics
yes.
201 is all they have to do. So
if
you've had some economics course sometime in your life, you would have the prerequisite for it. And you could that would give you an idea, although you would have to look at videos of me talking. But, you know, and then as far as the research course, you know, that's something for our majors. And you have to be an economics major. And in your last semester, then you sign up for one of these research sections. And
very interesting.
This
section.
One's hard to get into, but
I'm sure it's very popular. I tell you that. And you told me, Larry, that you were actually looking at yourself teach, and you smack right. And that's something you're going to try to work on, huh?
Well, Al, you're my role model here for how to speak clearly without ums and ahs.
I definitely
and
say ums
smacks.
And ahs too. If I didn't have his script, Larry, it would be bad. Trust me. Oh man. But there you have it, Larry Martin, professor in the field of economy over at Michigan State University. Larry, thanks so much for joining us on the show. We got to have you on again, man.
Yeah, that's fun. A lot of fun, Al. Thanks a lot.
Hey, no problem. Yeah. All right, when we return to current sports, we'll dive into our current sports section of the show. I want to let you know that we'll be taking your calls right now. 517-355-9527. Let us share your thoughts on any of today's topics or just anything on your mind. More current sports is next. Don't go anywhere.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, President Assad has always said the conflict in Syria is not a popular uprising, it's terrorism. He may finally be right.
The Al-Qaeda affiliates have been able to create a presence that, at least in the eyes of many Syrians, they hope can eventually tip the battle in their favor against the Assad regime and overthrow it.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. We just finished talking with Michigan State University professor in the field of economics, Larry Martin. He joined us to talk about that's very interesting sports economy, I tell you. And yes, I took his class back at MSU, and I believe that was 2008. Man, I did not do too hot in that class. I was actually pledging at the same time while I was taking the class. That was crazy moment. He's such a great guy, though. We'll have him on, you know, as current sports rolls on through. He has some great insight on many things as far as sports economy is concerned. All right, well, let's dive into our current sports section of the show. I'm joined by Mike Corey, Alex Sharp, Matt Lucky as we run down the biggest sporting news of last night and early this morning. All right, the Tigers. Even an injured Miguel Cabrera is dangerous. Man, down 3-0 to the Chicago White Sox yesterday. Minky hit a home run deep to left field to tie. I think it was tied at this point, right? Oh, no, down 3-0, excuse me. And Miggy, just unbelievable. Just take a look at it. Check it out.
Cabrera, 2-for-10 in the series. High, towering drive, deep left field to the track, to the wall, and we are tied. Miguel Cabrera continues a magical road trip with another big home run as he slowly takes the tour of the bases.
That is the 12th home run that Miguel Cabrera has hit this year on the first pitch of an at-bat.
Miguel Cabrera, he's not human. I'm convinced he is from outer space, Mars, Jupiter. I don't know where he's from, but he is not human. That's unbelievable. Again, down 3-0. Miggy hit that to really just uplift the Tigers and, man, tie things up. Gave them the spark, and the Tigers went on to win 6-4 to avoid a sweep to the White Sox. Here's Torii Hunter on Miggy's just incredible play, and what we're watching is special, people.
He's been gutting it out, so it doesn't surprise me. You know, he plays every day. He wants to play. And Miggy, you know, instead of him having to run, he just wanted to hit the home run. So it's kind of good, you know, that he's, you know, he can't run because he hit the home run. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure he wants some of those hits, too. Pitchers are trained to, you know, get ahead in the count and throw that first pitch strike. And, you know, with Miggy, you want to get ahead so you can play with him a little bit, but he won't allow it. And, I mean, some of those pitches are balls. Miggy's hitting balls out of the park. I mean, they're low and in, low and away, up and away, up and in. I mean, Miggy, you know, don't discredit him. He's pretty good. Pitchers are not trying to throw strikes down the middle. They're throwing balls, and he's still hitting them. Tippy cap. I mean, I wasn't here last year, but I watched him from afar, and I definitely think he's having a better year this year, and he's playing really good baseball.
Those are some pretty big words from Torii Hunter, I tell you. You think he's having a better year. Miggy's having a better year this year than he did last year. And, of course, last year he pulled off the Triple Crown. That's saying a lot, people. That is saying a lot. Now, Cabrera's home run came in the top of the third on a first-hit pitch, his 12th of the season, which leads the league. Now, he has been hampered by that bad ankle, but, man, I mean, it's like it never even happened, I tell you. So, Tigers, they avoid that sweep. We also have Jim Leland on his thoughts after the game.
Well, I was panicking, to be honest with you, because we didn't have Bondo today. We really didn't have a long guy today. And when he got his pitch count that high that early, it was Panicsville for me. But, unfortunately, he settled in and got us through it. And, you know, we milked some big outs out of the bullpen. And, you know, the big guy come through with another big one. Just a good game and a good win. Well, he's obviously shown that he's capable of that. So, you know, and he was quick on it. I mean, he just fired his hands. It looked like a cutter. I don't know if it was for sure, but it looked like it. And he just pulled his hands in, and they were like lightning through the zone. You know, so, you know, he's remarkable. And we just, you know, hopefully, actually the shin that's all black and blue is just terrible. It's terrible looking, but it actually looked a little bit better today. The knee's still pretty sore. Stomach is what it is. So hopefully we can get him healthy. Because as a manager, you almost feel bad, to be honest with you, sometimes playing him. Because, you know, I can see that he's hurting some. But he wanted to play today. And, you know, I put him in there. Tough one last night, last couple nights. And then, you know, get down 3-0, come back like this, last day of the road trip. Got to be happy with him, proud of him. Fought tooth and nail. And Porcello settled in. He didn't get too excited, settle in, pitch well for us. And
so the Tigers, they now have a six-game lead in the AL Central. They take on the Kansas City Royals, who are 7.5 games back in the division in a five-game series beginning today. Guys, is Miggy right now, since we've been alive, we're all young guys, is he the best baseball player you guys have ever seen?
Well, I, you know, it depends. Ask me in 5 years if there's a PED scandal waiting there. I'm not saying there is, but, like, you know, it seems like everyone who we anoint as the best player in baseball 5 years later is, you know, a disgraced former best player in baseball.
Right.
But the guy's amazing. And, you know, in addition to the 12 first pitch home runs, he's hit 5 that have been 6 inches or more on the inside of the plate.
Crazy, right?
You don't, like, you can try and intentionally walk him, and he's still probably going to take a swing at it and hit it out of the park. It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Absolutely. I remember 4 years back when it was basically Miggy and the Mud Hens, when there was a Tiger period where the farm system ran the team. And that was dating back to Brandon Ingera. That was dating back to the times when, even as far as Mike Maroth, but without Cabrera. Yeah. But it was just funny because at one point it was Miggy and the Mud Hens. 3 years later, 4 years later, now they have a team around him, and now they're a World Series team. Now, is Miggy the best player we've ever seen? I don't know, because not only are we awaiting a PED.
Well, have you?
Scared.
I'm asking as per.
Right.
Have you ever seen a better player than Miggy since you've been on this earth for 21 or 22 years?
I don't think so. You've got a couple of years on us, so maybe you were more in prime when Maguire and Sosa were hammering home runs.
Yeah, but I tell you what, looking at Miggy, like I said, like Torrey Hunter said, I mean, a guy, I've never seen a player who, like I said, you can try to intentionally walk the guy. I mean, you're throwing balls at him, and he's smacking it out the park for homers. I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. And looking at, you know, now I'm older. During that time, I was, 8 years old when Sosa and Maguire were going through their thing. I didn't really understand the essence of that moment. But now, you know, being older and actually watching the game, critiquing it, and looking at how these pitchers are approaching Miguel Cabrera and seeing how special he is when every time he approaches the plate. I mean, I literally stopped what I'm doing. I had the Tigers game going on. I'm doing other stuff on my laptop, reading different things. When Miguel Cabrera approaches the plate, I stop what I'm doing and watch this man.
Sure.
It's unbelievable.
And here's where I'll argue with you 1 second, is that I think we can call him the best player if he has that moment. I don't think Cabrera has had that moment yet, as we saw with Maglio Ordóñez in the ALCS.
What do you mean by what moment?
The moment that he's a game changer. You look at great players. Oh, I know he's a game changer.
Yeah, I feel like
let me continue. Hold on. Let me continue.
Hold on.
We've seen game changers. We've seen Jordan in the game six. We've seen Maglio Ordóñez's game series clinching ALCS home run. But we haven't seen any World Series type of game changing plays from Miguel Cabrera. Now you can blame the pitching. You can blame it all you want. But I'm going to say that he hasn't won a World Series.
So you're telling
yet.
Me Miguel Cabrera is not a game changer right now?
I'm not saying he's not.
Didn't
a game changer.
Didn't he win a World Series in Florida?
He's got a triple crown, Alex.
I'm not saying.
I'm pretty sure he won a World Series with the Marlins.
Yeah, with the Marlins. Yeah, Florida.
He's won a World Series of Florida. But I'm not saying that he's not the best player because, you know, he's not a game changer. He definitely is. You said it yourself.
Are you talking about his performance in a World Series?
I just think that as a Tiger, in the prime of his career winning the Triple Crown, he needs to win a World Series first. Before you call him the best player.
I'm just going on what you said when you say he's not a game changer.
Oh, he is a game changer.
Okay, I'm just
I don't
all right,
think
clear
he's
that
had
up,
a game
please.
Changing moment, Al. He hasn't had a game changing moment.
What does that mean?
I don't know. He had a game changing moment yesterday.
last night was a game changing moment. They were down 3-0.
I'm talking about a game changing moment when it matters. In the playoffs. When it really, really matters.
So you're waiting on that shining moment. You're waiting on one shining moment.
Exactly. I will crown him best player.
Go ahead, Mike.
For me, it's always magic when he comes up to play, but honestly, in my lifetime, Miggy is definitely great. He's the best player in the league definitely right now. For me in my lifetime, it's always going to be Ken Griffey Jr.
Ken Griffey was good.
Ken Griffey Jr. is by far my favorite player because during that whole home run thing, he was there right with them. It was Sosa, Smith, McGuire. He was always a little bit behind, though. We know why now, though. Yeah. Obviously, you look back, he was the home run king of that time. He's probably one of the definitely greatest first-time ballot Hall of Famer. Ever.
He was unbelievable.
And he was amazing in the field, too.
Yes, absolutely.
If you're going to point at Cabrera at a weakness, it's the fielding.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree with you.
As far as best hitter I've ever seen, yeah, definitely. I mean, Barry Bonds, when he was, you know, hulking out, so to speak, he was great. But this is like, you know, he's doing it on one leg.
What I'm confused with, guys, is we saw Griffey. We've seen the shoes. We've seen the commercials. We've seen him in films.
I just bought the shoes, yeah.
That's right. But why haven't we seen Miguel Cabrera commercialized?
Because you can't understand what he's saying. That's what it is. He's got such a heavy accent. And I'm not saying it like it's just that's the way it is. He's less marketable than Ken Griffey Jr., All-American hero.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Just look at Miggy. I mean, as far as Miggy being seen on commercials and everything, of course you can't hear what Miguel Cabrera is saying either. So, I mean, probably on that aspect. But, I mean, it is baseball, too. I mean, baseball compared as far as being individualized and promoted in other sports – I mean, baseball is lacking in that area.
Oh, and I agree. But let me just say this. If Yao Ming can do it, then Miggy can do it.
That's NBA, though.
That'll mean there's a way thicker accent than me.
Yeah. The NBA is more worldwide.
Well, it's more sport-wide. Sport. When you look at the sport of baseball,
you can't get
America.
More worldwide than baseball.
And
the World Baseball Classic. Is there a world? I mean, yes, they're the World Basketball Championship. But still, come on. Let's face it. If Yao Ming can go up there in a commercial and have a way thicker accent than Miggy, then Miggy can do the same thing.
Right. Okay. So we won't blame Miggy. We'll blame advertisers. It's in there. The ball is in there.
Okay, if you're going to blame, all right. Well, that's a great Barbershop Wednesday. Alex, you love arguing. You the man. I love arguing. You always push me to argue. All right, Pistons. The Detroit Pistons. Although the Detroit Pistons are playing their home games in Auburn Hills, they are adding a little hometown Motown feel to their jerseys in 10 games next season. The Pistons will wear the new alternate jerseys with the words Motor City across the front of the jersey. I really like them. They were designed to celebrate the pride and character of Metro Detroit while paying homage to the region's automotive roots. The jerseys were unveiled yesterday, featuring Pistons big man Greg Monroe sporting the new look of the team. Dennis Mannion, of the CEO of the Palace Sports and Entertainment for the Detroit Pistons, said, quote, "When you say Motor City, no matter where you are in the world, everyone knows you are talking about Detroit. We are proud to represent Detroit and hope these uniforms will serve as a source of pride for our fans in this region." You guys like the jerseys?
I do. I like the idea.
I dig them.
The execution could be a little better,
yeah,
but I think they're pretty cool.
I think they're hot, man. I love them.
And they're not teal.
They're not teal. Yeah. Gosh, they're not teal.
Not teal, not
yeah. They're like a dark blue. Dark blue, leave a red on the side, a red stripe on the side. I think they're really cool. I love Motor City on the front.
Now, did they mention the longevity of these jerseys? Are these here to stay?
Well, they said 10 games. They're going to play them in 10 games and see how it works and see, you know, how the fans react to them.
Probably see how, you know, sales go. And
right. They want to see the reception of the fans with them. So I got to say, I really like the idea. I love the look. I think they'll be around for some time after these 10 games.
More than those, like, Lightning Bolt jerseys from the last alternate jerseys they had.
Yeah, those were
bad. Well, I think those are throwbacks, right?
Throwbacks. Not really.
Was that an alternative jersey?
They're like white. They're like white. Had like lightning bolts on it. I don't really remember them too much.
I'm thinking of a different jersey. I don't remember that jersey.
I was like, it was around the time Ben, like the whole group five was still around in 2005.
Gotcha. Well, they were not pretty.
They were not pretty at all.
These are simple. Sometimes it's just the simplest jerseys that look good.
They're pretty sharp.
All right, the USA Today Coaches Poll was not high on the Michigan State Spartans when it released its top 25 recently, but the same can't be said about Sports Illustrated. In its preseason college football rankings, MSU is ranked 15th, yeah, ranked ahead of Michigan also, who placed 18th on the list. Now, according to Sports Illustrated, they place a lot of praise on the Spartan defense, saying, quote, six starters returned from a unit that ranked first in the Big Ten in rushing defense, pass efficiency defense, and scoring defense, led by hard-hitting linebacker Max Bulla and ball-hawking cornerback Darquez Denard, and so on and so on and so on. So Sports Illustrated loves the defense, and they have Michigan State ranked 15th in the top 25. Now, even after the offense struggled last year, Sports Illustrated said even the slightest improvement might help push the Spartans to the top of the Big Ten. You got to love these preseason predictions. They're always up in the air, I tell you. All right, the MSU mannequin scare. This is a hilarious video. Go to YouTube, check it out. Go on MSU football's website. It's hilarious. Now, Michigan State student Garrett Bringingstall. I'm terrible with this. Bringingstall. I think that's his name. He dressed up, bro.
Bringingstall.
Thank
stool.
You. Beautiful.
Stool.
Thank you, my translator, Alex. I really appreciate you, man. Garrett Bringingstall, he dressed up in a full Sparty football attire and stood outside of the school's football facility as early as 6:30 a.m., surprising members of the team as they came in for preseason training camp. The video is hilarious. Now, he would scare individuals who would walk by who thought he was a mannequin. Now, one of the best reactions of the day came from head coach Mark D'Antonio, who showed up first to the facility. In the video, he shouts and pulls his hands, clearly believing that he is under attack. It is a hilarious video. He scares a lot of members on the team. Other classic reactions include defensive back Mark Myers, who nearly runs off into the tunnel when he sees a mannequin pursuing him. It's a very funny video. Check it out. It will be on our Facebook page for current sports. Hilarious stuff. All right, the HGH testing in the NFL. Now, dozens of former NFL players will be administered human growth hormone as the NFL and its players union try to determine the impact of the use on players' HGH levels. Now, the tentative plan is roughly for 100 former players to participate, with two-thirds receiving HGH and the other third receiving a placebo. Now, their HGH levels will be measured before and after the trial. The NFL and the union agreed to blood tests for HGH in the collective bargaining agreement that was finalized 2 years ago. But a series of issues, including the NFLPA's insistence on the population study to determine what a normal HGH level is, for an NFL player has delayed implementation. All right, so that'd be interesting to see how that turns out. And meet the Aggies. Matt, you were dead on with this yesterday. We talked about the Meet the Spartans event, and you brought up how, you know, you don't know what the Aggies are going to do with the whole Johnny Football situation.
Right.
Well, they came out today and announced that players and coaches will not sign any memorabilia for fans attending the Meet the Aggies event August 24th. Instead, the only autographs allowed will be on specially provided autograph cards in order to accommodate as many fans as possible. And that's according to Texas A&M statement released yesterday. Now, this all comes in wake of the whole Johnny Manziel situation, who is being investigated by the NCAA with his role in signing autographs, leading to an uncertainty with his status as an Aggie. Now, Texas A&M also said players and coaches would remain seated at the event and will not pose for photos. Johnny Football has messed it up for everybody, hasn't he?
I feel like he'll have his own booth around the corner of the stadium with a sign, like a lemonade stand that says autographs, $7,500.
$7,500 to get an autograph.
Boy.
And you know what the lemonade stands, they have the 75 with the cent logo.
Right.
You take three of those and turn them into zeros.
There you go. It's
That's terrible, man. He just messed it up for all the Aggies fans out there. All right. Josie Altidore. Oh, man. This guy was unbelievable yesterday. The U.S. men's soccer team, they just keep on rolling. Now, fresh off their victory at the Gold Cup, the U.S. extended their winning streak to 12 games thanks to Altidore's hat trick with a 4-3 comeback win over Bosnia. I won't even attempt to say the other part of that. Altidore extended his scoring streak to 5 consecutive games, helping the U.S. erase a 2-0 deficit with the friendly goal. If you missed it, check it out.
Well, you wonder with the arrival of Clint Dempsey in Seattle, is Eddie Johnson going to have to play that role? Is Josie Altidore! Josie has done it again! He is a record breaker! 5 goals in 5 games for Altidore. 5 straight games with a goal already for Altidore. Now a Carlo! Yes! He's done it again! Josie Altidore! And the United States have come back from 2 down to lead 3-2. Tell you, you have to credit the tactical changes. It couldn't get better yet. It's Josie Altidore on the hat trick! Josie Altidore having one of the games of his life for the United States.
That man was unbelievable. Altidore, he extended his scoring streak to 5 consecutive games, helping the U.S. erase a 2-0 deficit to win with the friendly. He scored the equalizer in the 59th minute, then the go-ahead goal in the 84th, and then another in the 86th to give the Americans a 2-goal cushion. I'm speechless. I mean, you rarely see that in soccer. Man, congrats to the U.S. They just really keep on rolling. All right, just 40 days after winning tennis's most prestigious tournament, Marion Bartoli has announced she is retiring from the game. The reigning Wimbledon champion made the stunning announcement that she's hanging them up following a loss to Simona Halep at the Western and Southern Open in Mason, Ohio. The 28-year-old French woman expressed she'd been feeling intense pain and had seen her body break down on the court, saying, quote, "It's never easy, and obviously there is never a time to say it or whatever, but that was actually the last match of my career." Bartoli, who has tied her career high ranking of 7 in the WTA rankings, won her first Grand Slam at Wimbledon in her 47th slam appearance, setting the record for the most tournaments before a victory. And watching that press conference this morning on my way to work, I mean, she was really choked up, but you gotta respect her. 28 years old and to pull off the going through this and the tons of pain throughout the tournament, and to go in and win the Wimbledon at 28, that was truly something special to see. And hats off to Marion Bartoli. And all right, before we hit the break, McNabb and RG3, they're beefing, folks. Yes, though he isn't unlikely to play this preseason, Redskins QB Robert Griffin III is staying plenty busy after feuding or not feuding with head coach Mike Shanahan over practice reps and playing time. Griffin's other feud with ex-Redskins QB Donovan McNabb has resurfaced after recent comments from the retired QB. Quote, "I honestly think that over there in Washington, he's getting brainwashed." That's what McNabb said on an NBC sports radio show Tuesday. Quote, "He's getting input from whoever it may be on. There's no reason to talk to him. It didn't work out here." All right, Griffin, who recently told GQ magazine that he doesn't think Donovan is an idiot by any means, but right now it's probably the best that we don't talk. He has been engaged in a bit of public bickering with his coach Mike Shanahan over playing time in this preseason, as you all know. Now, McNabb, who had an unsuccessful run with the Redskins near the end of his career, reached out last season offering counsel to Griffin, who rebuffed the offer. Now, McNabb had previously criticized Mike Shanahan in an appearance on ESPN's First Take in 2012. Interesting stuff there. All right, well, let's go to the break. Ladies and gents, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Facebook us, tweet me, email me, stick around. More Current Sports is coming right at you.
What's going on in your brain while you sleep, and how can you make sure you get the sleep you need? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with neuroscientist Penelope Lewis, author of The Secret World of Sleep. She runs the Sleep and Memory Lab at the University of Manchester in England. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We'll be taking your calls right now to discuss anything that's on your noggin. Again, 517-355-9527. Give us a buzz. And ladies and gents, it's Thursday, Throwback Thursday. We're about to pop that off as well. And again, we want to remind you all that the very first taping of Current Sports TV is today. I can't believe it. Today, 6 p.m. right here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building in Studio F. Greg Special K. Kelser will join me for the very first episode. Again, we'll broadcast it on September 12th. Mark down your calendar. September 12th will be the premiere episode that will take place at 10 p.m. on WKAR TV. Cannot wait for that, guys. Can you believe this already? We're doing radio, TV now. It's crazy. Crazy.
We're big time now.
We're big time, man.
Whew. We're on the map.
Start asking for our autographs, folks. It's going to be worth
$7,500.
$7,500. That's for Matt's autograph. I'm gonna go less than that. Like $2. That's all I need. I'm not. Yeah. Matt's fancy.
I sell one. I'm set.
You're set. Yeah. You're set.
Have fun selling 3,000.
Yeah, 3,000. Yeah,
find that one Matt Lucky fan.
They're out there, baby.
Maybe both.
They are out there. Trust me. All right. Throwback Thursday. Matt, what you got for us, man?
All right. It's a lot of baseball, obviously. You know, Dog Days of August. We're going to start out in 1912. Yankees player Guy Zinn, that's his name, steals home twice in one game. Which is pretty impressive. That's like that the Sandlot or something.
Guy Zinn. What a name. That's
no. 1984, Pete Rose, then 43 years old. He is traded to the Reds where he becomes the player manager in Cincinnati. 1993, Nolan Ryan records his 324th victory. It would be his last in a 4-1 win over Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Then we get busy over in the 2000s here. 2006. Both Arizona and the Chicago Cubs win games that finish in 18 innings. It is the first
18 innings.
Arizona wins 2-1 over the Rockies, and the Cubs win 8-6 over Houston. First time ever two 18-inning games are played in the same day, although that would also happen this season when the Blue Jays beat the Rangers in 18, and then the Mets lost to the Marlins in 20.
In 20, wow.
Talk about getting your money's worth as a fan. Yeah. I'm going to go
watch.
Did
it say how long those games were?
No, it didn't. It doesn't. But I imagine it was four or five, six or seven weeks. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Something crazy. That's crazy, insane. And then 2007 here, former major league player Jose Offerman. He's currently he was in the minors at the time. He charges the mound, but unlike many players who charge the mound, he remembers to bring the bat. And even more unlike most players who charge the mound, he takes swings at the opposing pitcher.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he was
that dude
arrested,
must be from Detroit, I tell you.
Arrested two counts of second-degree assault. So
wow.
Good job, Jose. I'm sure he'll never forget this day.
So he struck out a couple more times with the bat.
Yeah, something like that.
Man.
No word on if he made contact on this one.
I hope he didn't. That's pretty brutal.
2007 as well. Tim Donaghy, the NBA scandal. He pleads guilty to two felony charges stemming from the NBA betting scandal.
Wow. I tell you, when you talk about Tim Donaghy, I mean, he's the poster boy ref for foul play when it comes to officiating, I tell you. Man, I can't believe – I mean, that was
– And it's like you almost barely ever hear about him.
Yeah, I know. Nowadays,
the NBA has
done
a great job of turning the page. Let's move on.
Yep.
Nothing to see here. And they've
been successful at it, definitely. Yeah. But I tell you what, the diehard NBA fans have not forgotten, though.
No, not at all.
Trust me. And that's something I always – when I look at a game now, when I look at the NBA finals or the playoffs and some iffy happens, I'm like –
mm-hmm.
That dude might be getting paid.
Maybe.
Pavetta, you're getting paid. I don't know. All right. Also, I had two other ones. Today's, as far as birthdays go on this Throwback Thursday, it's Gene Upshaw's B-Day. He was born in 1945, so August 15th, 1945, Gene Upshaw. And in 2005, Phil Mickelson birdied the 72nd hole to win the PGA Championship in 2005. And in 1999... Tiger Woods captured the PGA Championship, earning a one-shot victory over Sergio Garcia at Medina Country Club, in suburban Chicago. So, yeah, definitely. I mean, when you talk about it's the dog days of summer, you just got golf, you got baseball.
Right.
It's about it. So
the occasional referee scandal.
That just happens, yeah. You know. That kind of stuff happens. So, again, though, tonight, 6 p.m., Gregory Special K. Kelser will be joining me for the very first taping of Current Sports TV. Definitely looking forward to it. Mike, you have a update on the pick'ems, right?
Not so much. It's basically the same. Okay. Me and you are tied at the top with 3 points, and Matt and Alex at the bottom with 1, because we just finished up the White Sox series, and nobody got that right because the White Sox ended up winning the series 2-1. We all picked 2-1 Tiger series, except for you, Al, who picked 3-0. So so we're still all the same, and now we got the 5-game series against the Royals coming up, and everybody, a little bit boring, picked 3-2 Tigers for that series.
Yes, we did. That's a safe pick, though. No one wants to sing, I tell you, because...
No.
Man, that was a
do
great
Do we have that
rendition.
Lineup? Do we have Matt's?
Do we? We're going to play it again.
I will walk out of the studio.
It was so good that we could not resist playing it yesterday. Shout out to Aaron. That was hilarious stuff. But all right, so nothing's really changed.
Then we got the home runs. Everyone's got 2 except for me. I say Miggy's going to hit 3. Hopefully he's not out of this entire series like the last time we tried to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We got the tonight, the preseason game number 2 for the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
Al, you picked the Lions to win. Matt, you got Cleveland. Me and Alex both had the Lions winning. And then New York Yankees Red Sox series that starts up. Everyone has the Red Sox win that series 2-1, except for Alex, who went with the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And then the Falcons and Ravens, two of the top teams coming into preseason. We both had when we're doing top 5 Tuesdays. We both had the Falcons up pretty high. Ravens as well, as Super Bowl champions. Ravens, me and Matt both selected the Ravens to win. Alex and Al both have the Falcons.
Interesting stuff. All right, well, it's a lot of preseason games on today. Again, tonight, Detroit, they will play the Browns at 7:30. I should just be getting done with that taping with Gray.
Who do you think is the player to watch in that game? I know it's preseason, but is there any person on your mind who you're going to be looking out for specifically to see if they show up?
If there is a position that I'm looking at, specifically, is it would have to be that running back position for me. I'm very intrigued with the whole Reggie Bush phenomena right now. Mykel Ashore, it's someone who I would like to see. I would just perform in the preseason. For me, I would definitely be looking at the running back. It's just me, though.
Right, and what I'm looking for is if Matt Stafford is going to complete a pass to anyone but Calvin Johnson.
But Calvin got his to that game got their money's worth.
Yeah, he got his workload in. You know, one nice drive, but you know,
For me, it has been looking at the wide receivers. Not, of course, you know, Calvin's going to be there in Burroughs and in Broyles. For me, you know, the gem out of last week's game was Matthew Willis.
Right.
He came out. He really showed up, trying to compete for that fourth wide receiver spot. So it was really nice to see him show up. Had a couple great catches and a touchdown. So that's what I'm still looking at that because, you know, you never know who's going to show up.
Right. And I don't know how we've made it, 3 minutes into talking about the Lions and haven't said Kickalicious yet.
Exactly. Very true. And, you know, I watched Kickalicious' video for the very first time yesterday. Just I wasn't doing anything. Well, I needed a break. And I'm like, I haven't seen this video yet. That kid is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable. He was kicking field goals through the uprights on the side of the goalposts. Like, making it hook. I could not believe what I was watching. Then he has one where he kicks it. It's like a railroad track, and there's a hill down low. Mm-hmm. And he kicks the football way up there. I mean, if you haven't seen the Kickalicious video, I see why the Lions gave this kid a shot. Because he is unbelievable. He learned English through listening to the Wu-Tang Clan. It's very interesting, too.
It's certainly his job. It's David Aker's job to lose right now, but Kickalicious is really
keep him on the roster.
He's making it very interesting.
He will sell some tickets, man.
He's going to end up somewhere. If he's not a Lion during the season, I think someone will take a chance on him because if he has a good game tonight, it'll be interesting to see if he's outdoors.
He had a good preseason game.
See if he can go outdoors and hit him outside.
Two long field goals, 49 to 50 yards. So he definitely impressed people last week.
Yeah, he definitely turned some heads during that Jets game. So
I'm pretty sure it was Stephen Tulloch lifted him up on his shoulders. So yeah. He made his first field goal.
He's special. But man, that YouTube video, check it out if you haven't seen it.
I'm also looking at the secondary.
I was just about to say that, Alex. We were on the same page, man. Yeah.
Well, look at last year. We saw so many
terrible
different sets.
Terrible secondary.
And I wouldn't say terrible. They were terrible.
Pretty awful.
Terrible.
They couldn't
secondary,
stop anybody.
They were just new guys going in and out. And it was hard. And
I thought it was
they
terrible.
They got Glover Quinn, a new addition. I'm sure he'll help out in some aspects. But, yeah, man, just the secondary, I think that's make or break.
I think one of the best additions was, you know, drafting Darius Slay. He's the rookie, right? He played pretty solid last week, and I'm looking for him to step up a little bit more this week as well.
Yeah, and if you look at last season and how many long balls that secondary gave up, it was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's what I want to bring up next. I mean, that secondary is something that, even though it is preseason, I would definitely be looking at that to see if it's improved from last season because that was definitely an Achilles heel for the Lions last season. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it turns out, though. Again, it's 7:30 tonight. Boy, a lot going on in sports. All right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Shard, Matt Lucky, production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKR. Thanks to MSU Sports Economics Professor Larry Martin for joining us. Really appreciate that. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Hey, take care. Be easy, people. Current Sports TV starts tonight.